Does science make belief in God obsolete? Monsignor?
Well, if I did, I'd be out of here in a second if I said yes. I have a problem with the question because in my case, okay, put it this is a question that I have had to face every day since it was first asked of me. I was asked the question when I first went into a non-religious atmosphere. Other scientists were all non-believers. When I identified myself as a Catholic, even a Latin Catholic, Latin American, they said impossible. It's absolutely, literally impossible. You cannot be devoted to the scientific method of looking at reality for 6 days, 5 days a week, 6 weeks, and then on the weekend you believe a dead man rose from the dead. I mean, you are either crazy or two persons or uncritical, etc. And frankly, when it was put that way, I experienced that in that case, what I understood my faith was indeed, and rather, that science was an obstacle to faith. But better, I was concerned that faith was an obstacle to science. I started from the point of science. That is what fulfilled me. That is what I was doing. So to me, the question was that. Is faith an obstacle to it? Because if it is, then I am sorry, I would choose science. And so I decided to look into this. And this is something I do all the way to here. So I would not read Mr. Hitchens' book. I read it with enthusiasm and eagerness because it is a question I must face every day. And so far, every day I've been able to affirm my faith. The day I cannot, I will not. I think that honesty is necessary, is needed. And if faith doesn't give me, is not the source of that honesty, then I don't want anything to do with that faith. It's not what I understand by faith.
We'll come back to the two people. Mr. Hitchens.
Just a word of preface. Salman Rushdie also drops one word from the title of my book. He says it's one word too long. You can probably guess which word that is. And Ian McEwan was once asked by an interviewer, I got the $54,000 question for you, and he thought, oh, Jesus, she's going to ask if I'm queer. And he said, okay, I'm braced. She said, what's your sign? I said, Capricorn. Right away. She said, I knew that the moment you came in here, you'd been so Capricorn. He let a rave on like this around. He said, actually, I'm Libra. And she said, without breaking a stride, she said, a lot of Libra people lie about their sign. Okay, so Gore Vidal once asked to your question.
Yes, sir.
Gore Vidal once, very well designed question, if I may.
Thank you. Thank you. I worked hard on it.
Gore Vidal once asked the late Sir Neil Coward, was it really true that he'd never had any sexual encounter with any woman at all? And Sir Neil replied, certainly not. Most certainly not. And Gore said, not even with Gertie Lawrence. And Coward said, particularly not with Miss Lawrence. A lot of people don't claim and can't claim to be scientists. I could particularly claim not to be a scientist. But I do understand something about the rules of logic and evidence, and about the logical and the probable, and the contingent and the non-contingent, and the sufficient and the necessary. And I think I'd have to say that Stephen Jay Gould understates things, at least, by saying that in an attempt at mutuality, that religion and science are dealing with a non-overlapping magisterium. It's certainly true that they don't overlap, but that doesn't make them any more compatible. They could still be, and I would argue they are, very difficult to reconcile. Why is that? Well, to be religious is not to be a deist, as I'm sure the Monsignor would confirm.
Mm-hmm.
To be religious is to be a theist. In other words, if what atheists cannot disprove, we don't say we can disprove it, we only say there's no reason to believe it, the existence of a god, they would only be deists. That's as far as you can get. The deist has all his work or her work still ahead of him to become religious. Because religion involves saying you know that god's mind. You know what he wants of you. You know what he wants of you in point of diet, in point of sex, mm-hmm. In point of conduct, and doctrine and other matters. You claim, in other words, to know what I would say without any hesitation. Much more than any human being can possibly know. So I think religion falls so to say, at the very, very first fence. Because the believer is claiming access to a certain knowledge that is not possible for a human being to have. Whereas science must operate, can in fact only operate on the basis of objective inquiry that is driven by doubt, by skepticism, and by uncertainty. So what science cannot be compatible with is, shall we say, faith.
I have a problem with the terminology religion and faith. So I can only say how I see it. Religion, I see, does not require even any particular content. It's a kind of attitude towards life, meaning, finding, gestures. You have religions that have no content, that are pure ritual or pure law, that make no statement about the unknowable, the mystery. So to me, religion is really, really a human, is of human origin. And what where it comes from, I don't know. The European government has given a friend of mine $10 million to prove that it comes from biological mechanism. I would have done it for $5 million. Because in the end, it's a human reality. People trying to make sense of the world, it's amazing. They fall into these rituals. So that's that. To me, faith is the big problem, because faith identifies this mystery with a concrete reality of this world. And that's where the claim has to be sustained. I mean, if you make that claim, then the question is, how do you verify this? And to me, the process of verification certainly includes the scientific critique. If science by itself can convince me that what I have found that sparks my faith, there's no reason to go any further. I would accept that. The problem is that it doesn't convince me. It's more like you try to explain to your uncomprehending family why you have fallen in love with so and so, and they have all the arguments and everything, but you can understand even why they are saying what they're saying. You can even see the same problems, but you can't help it. You've fallen in love. Sorry, Chris.
Well, but this, if you don't mind my saying so, Monsignor, is extraordinary. I mean, I'm used to people of faith saying, well, we don't mean this particular bit literally, or we don't necessarily insist on that myth or that miracle, but no. If you do not believe that the divine creator of all things sent us his son to suffer terribly, and by that suffering to purchase our redemption from not just from our sins, but from sin itself. And you don't seem to believe that. It's just as likely that this delusion arises for biological reasons. Then I protest. I was told I was going to argue with a person of faith today.
Okay. Well, I have to make sure we don't end up like the last friend of mine, the $10 million grant. Who said to me, either you are not a believer or I am not an atheist, but we agree. So maybe it'll be the other way around. You'll discover yourself a believer by the end. No. I do believe in Jesus Christ. I do believe in the little mini creed you have just recited. I have no. Okay. My question is not that. I don't believe that. Well, the reason is, why do I believe such a thing? I must relate it to a way I experience life. I experience the making sense of getting through every day, of even having, of the very interest and passion I have for reason, for reading your book, for getting excited at these discussions. Why do I care anything at all? If I cannot relate the doctrine of the church, we'll put it this way, to why I care about what I care, then to me, it's absolutely a theoretical matter, and you can substitute for Christ the great lizard for all I care. So I do believe this, but my question is why?
The first physicist to evolve the theory that we now call the Big Bang was a Roman Catholic at the University of Louvain in Belgium. Yeah. Anyway, he went to Rome to say, I think this is how everything began. I think this is what Genesis was, in fact. And the Pope looked at it, Pope Leo, I believe, and said, well, if you like, I'll make it obligatory for all Catholics to believe that. Now, I think you can see the difference in methodological approach, could I put it like that? But there is a serious question to be posed, and I'll pose it to the audience as well as to my interlocutors. Isn't it the case that religion has as its main advantage the fact that it came first? In other words, we are, which is why we design so many gods, H.L. Mencken counted, I think, 120,000 of them at one point. We are pattern-seeking mammals. We do look for explanations. We look for patterns. Our minds are designed to look for them. If you look for them, seek, and ye shall find. I used to think it was the most sinister thing in the religious education I was given. Of course, if you're looking for it and you want it badly enough, you'll find it. But if we knew what we now know, would we ever have become religious? Perhaps I could put it like that. Can I give you an example? We now know roughly the age of our species, the age of Homo sapiens. Some people say it's a quarter of a million years. Some people say it could be as little as 100,000. I don't particularly mind. Francis Collins of the Human Genome Project thinks maybe a quarter. Dawkins thinks it could be as little as 150. I'll take 100,000. 100,000 years of Homo sapiens, born into struggle, suffering, misery, uncertainty, fear, not knowing where earthquakes come from, not knowing where hailstorms come from, not knowing where eclipses come from, knowing nothing, dying in their 20s, if they were lucky, probably of their teeth, most of their children dying in childbirth, gradually struggling through this, not to say fights with other tribes and neighbors and so on. According to the National Geographic's founder of the other genome project, you can send in and find, have your own done. We were once, as a species, down to about 2,000 people in Africa. In other words, we nearly went the way of 99.9% of all species that have ever existed on the Earth by becoming extinct. Some designer, okay? 100,000 years of that slow improvement, here and there, also falling back at times. And heaven watches this with folded arms, with complete indifference, until about 4,000 years ago, when it decides it's time to intervene now. And probably the best way would be by organizing some human sacrifices in the most backward and barbarous parts of the Middle East. It's not impossible to believe that. It's not impossible to believe that. I personally don't. I must
say. If you stay at the level of religion, I have no disagreement with you whatsoever. That is to say, all things being equal, I am in full sympathy with the, although perhaps a little bit too, I don't want to use it. It's not as simple as that. But it is true. The way you put it is true. In fact, the question that I like is where would be, if we had known what we know now, would we have begun with religion? I would not. But the fact is that I know what is known now and have no reason to contest it, and yet it doesn't, it cannot all account for all of how I face life. That again, I must say, it is the link between the what I believe in, the what or maybe the who, and what makes sense in my life. And I want the scientists, science and the scientific community and the scientists that I know and people like you. You know, I listen and read to you too with the open mind of wanting to be taught. If you convince me, then I hope to have the honest obligation, the honest response of saying, okay, that's it. I don't need any more to postulate anything else. But I cannot do that at all. And I cannot do it. But I'm willing to do this struggle every day. And I hope that it is a reasonable one and that I can convince you that what I am doing is not ridiculous. It is reasonable. Beyond that, I have nothing more to say. I mean it. I read what you've just said. It's in the book here. Of course, I read that, and I read your book. And I've been an admirer of Mr. Isherwood before. First of all, who can, the English wit, So, I mean, it's great. They produce people like this. So, and I love it. I'm a Puerto Rican Monsignor, for God's sake. My ancestors were worshipping coconuts.
Everybody thinks that they know that Karl Marx said that religion was the opium of the people. In fact, he said no such thing. What he said, you can find it. It's a very beautiful passage in the introduction to his critique of Hegel's philosophy of right. He says, religion is the heart of the heartless world, the sigh of the oppressed creature, the spirit of the spiritless situation. He then adds as a metaphor, it is an opiate for the people. He adds, this is the crucial bit, criticism of religion has plucked the flowers from the chain. Not so that men shall wear the chain without any consolation, but so that they may break the chain and cull the living flower. And as you can see, this makes the distinction that I think Monsignor's been aiming to make, that I want to take up, which is this. But to be an atheist and a materialist is not to be a reductionist. It's not to say there is no mystery, or that life is merely a series of chemical reactions, or that love or orgasm are biologically reducible to formulae. That would be boring. It's to make the distinction between the numinous and the transcendent, which we do need and will always seek, and the supernatural. And I think it's a very important distinction. Verdi could write his Requiem while not being a believer in God. But he wouldn't have said, he said, people can do without God, but they can't do without music. They can't do without some feeling of magnificence and drama and pain and struggle that's beyond themselves. Absolutely, that's important. But I think to distinguish it from the supernatural, from ancestor worship, from human sacrifice, from primitive ritual, is of the very first importance. I'll just say one thing before I stop. I've written a short book about the Parthenon. I believe it's a building of fantastic importance for Western civilization. I also believe its sculpture should be reunified, preferably in Athens. And I think that the study of this building is essential, and that if we were to lose that building, we would be poorer as a species by an incalculable amount. But I don't believe in the cult of Pallas Athena. I don't believe at all in the Eleusinian mysteries, as I understand them. I don't believe in Athenian imperialism. I think it may be possible that on that frieze, actually human sacrifice is depicted. Even though we revere Greek philosophy, it had its dark side. But it is possible, by the use of intelligence and science and discrimination, to have what is valuable from the anthropology of our spiritual past without believing that the heavens are full of supervising devils or other tyrants, the worst kind, the ones who claim to be benign.
It's the birth of science is a beautiful thing. One of the reasons is its purifying power over superstition and uncritical religious convictions and practices and intolerance and horror that unfortunately we see is in fact not over today. And so to me the science is a blessing. Okay. And I'm not just sitting there reading about this, but applying it in my own life. I mean, I live things at a very small scale, but I go through the daily experience of innocent, seeing innocent people suffer, not understanding why things have to happen. I have to deal with this every day. And in that, the science, if I may say so, encourages me to try to understand. I mean, if a person is sick, mentally ill, as someone very close to me is, if a person is like that, then, what does science recommend? What has been found? My mother with Alzheimer's, is there anything I can be given to her? Again, these are not cosmic issues, but they're my own little cosmos every day. And in it, the fruits and results of science is something I welcome and I admire. To me, however, it's not only science that serves to give this critique that is so important. To me, faith... My faith encourages me to tell science that it is worthwhile to pursue its path and its integrity, because science, this very knowledge, is very beautiful, has been as misused as has religion been. In the history of the world, I don't think neither one, science or the religious world, can have a claim to moral superiority.
I would have to say that a miracle wouldn't convince me, okay, of the existence of a Christian God, necessarily. Remember, you have all your work still ahead of you. The Old Testament shows a contest between Pharaonic sorcerers and Mosaic sorcerers. In the end, Aaron beats Pharaoh's magicians and miracle workers. But does miracle working prove to you that the Pharaonic rule in Egypt is valid? It doesn't to me, I have to say. So if I saw a miracle, I'd be inclined to doubt the evidence of my own eyes, as David Hume enjoins one to do, rather than to believe that the laws of nature had been suspended in order to give me a good impression of myself.
But I'm rendering you...
I want to comment by 1,000 times underlining my agreement with you.
Well, with someone else,
I think Jesus thought the same way. Because he made it very clear at the end that he didn't have a very high view of the power of miracles to help anyone. These people won't believe even if someone comes back from the dead. There is one factor, though, upon which he risked everything, in which he was willing to risk the authenticity of who he was, and risking it the night before he died, where he says in the Gospel of St. John, the world will believe only to the degree that you love one another. If you break this love, the world is right in not believing anything of my claims. I read that, and I say, see, that to the degree that love is purer, like that unconditional, forever, without any reason, to that degree, I recognize more this presence. But the moment, starting with me, I cannot live up to that love. It goes away, and I am abandoned to a world of miracles, which in fact produce absolutely no certainty at all. You say something in the article in here, which I love, about the apparitions. Why do they always have to be to ignorant children in the middle of nowhere? I always said, why caves and trees? Why not Times Square? One Harvard campus. And I agree with that. I think this is apparitions. If right now at Times Square there would be somebody and the sun would I believe? Not at all. Because I would first have to try self-deception.
It won't happen
because see it.
The Virgin Mary does not appear to non-Catholics. Never has.
Yeah, that we know, because they go directly to Jesus.
You'd have to have a very suspicious mind. Now, I agree with you that the love test isn't subject to the reason test. But there are things about love that I think ought not to be imposed upon too much. For one thing, I don't think you can make love compulsory. In other words, it's not that you hope for the love of God. It's that you are enjoined to love him. Mm-hmm. And you're enjoined to love him on pain of death, and you're enjoined to love someone who you must also fear. Now, compulsory love of someone who you also fear is too much to me like a celestial North Korea.